So they've been around for a long time. And I know most of you have heard a whole lot about how you're our future, which is true because it's just simple math. You're going to outlive a lot of people. But I've also had the incredible privilege of serving with a lot of young people in general service who've gone on to become delegates and trustees and non-trustee directors. I had the privilege of serving with Liz H. from Portland, who is the youngest ever appointed member, the youngest appointed member ever to serve at the age of 24. And I can't tell you what she and Tina H. from Wisconsin brought to the board and the way they served us. So for us to think that you're only our future is incorrect. We have a huge, a vast, rich history of young people serving in general service. But more importantly, I tell you, the most important job you serve is to be AA's present.
Yes.
You're being here this weekend. What you do is one of the most important things because our primary purpose is to carry the 12-step message. And so what you do here is important. What you do when you go back home and you say, hey, is my group apart? Are they actually participating as the collective conscience of Alcoholics Anonymous and looking out for not just young people but for everyone in AA? So I encourage you to go back and make sure that your group has a voice and that they participate in general service. In his opening talk at the 1954 General Service Conference, the late Bernard B. Smith, non-alcoholic chair of the Board of Trustees, stated, "We need a conference to ensure the recovery of a child being born tonight destined for alcoholism. We need it to provide, in keeping with our 12th step, a permanent haven for all alcoholics who in the ages ahead can find in AA that rebirth that brought us back to life. We need it to ensure that changes within AA come as a response to the needs and wants of all AA and not of any few. We need it to ensure that the doors of the halls of AA never have locks on them, so that all people for all time who have an alcoholic problem may enter these halls unasked and feel welcome. We need it to ensure that Alcoholics Anonymous never ask of anyone who needs us what his or her race is, what his or her creed is, what his or her social position is. And I would add to that, I pray that they never ask what your age is. Thank you.
Thank you, Madeline. We will now have a word from Wacky Paw 15's chairman, Dane R.
Welcome everybody to Wacky Paw 15. Thank you for coming. My name is Dane and I am an alcoholic. Lots and lots and lots. Oh, this is kind of harder than I thought. Livy Paw formed a little over 5 years ago, and I just really want to tell you real quick the reason why we did this. And there's a few of us that went to some of these conferences, and we fell in love with this. And there was a goal and there was a dream that we could take one of these back and show to our community. And it took a long time to do that, and... time, and it took a lot of hard work, and not just for me. You know, I couldn't do this without everybody that put all the work in for years and years and years. And I'm just a small part of a big whole, you know. And So I just really want to say that I'm grateful to the Conference of Wacky Paw in general for being able to be there for communities like Las Vegas that has not had much exposure to young peoples, and from what I've seen this weekend, really, really needed it as much as all of us thought. So thank you for being here. Next, real quick, is I just really want to talk about the growth of our host community this year has been amazing. It's been actually absolutely epic. From the first time we started out like a bunch of crazy people, not really knowing how to work together. Egos were clashing, and everybody was, you know. And by the end of it, just like I think with any host committee is typical, you know, we start calming down in the business meetings. We start loving on each other, and things start flowing. It flows. And just real quick, you know, there were some things that I saw last night, and by the need of this thing, and I'm sure a lot of people on host saw this too, just the faces that you see and the impacts it has in people's lives. You can tell people about things like this, but until they experience it for themselves, it's a totally different story. And to see the facial expressions on people in that experience has probably been the best thing I've ever, and I'm sure any of us as a committee have ever seen in my entire life, and I'm sure theirs too. So really, I just want to thank all the committee for all their hard work. It was a really long, hard road. Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Thank you, Dane. Okay, last night we had a competition called Mr. Wacky Paw. And our winner is here tonight. Tucker from Sacky Paw is your new Mr. Wacky Paw. Tucker, stand up. Thank you to everyone who participated in that. Okay, now I have asked Andy D. to read Wacky Paw's Facts, Aims, and Purposes.
Andy!
Hello, my name's Andy, and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you. This is the Wacky Paw Facts, Aims, and Purposes. Wacky Paw was conceived at the 1996 ASCII Paw and was later founded in Anaheim, California on September 8, 1996 at the 39th ICKY Paw in a meeting of AA members from around the region to be served by Wacky Paw. At the meeting, the region was defined as the states of Alaska, Arizona, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Idaho, Montana, Nevada, New Mexico, Oregon, Utah, Washington, and Wyoming, as well as the Baja California, Baja California, sir, Chihuahua, Durango, Sonora, and the Canadian provinces of British Columbia, Yukon Territory, and Alberta. Each year, the conference must be held within this region. The purpose of Wacky Paw is to build and strengthen unity in young people, groups, and Alcoholics Anonymous in the western area of North America and Hawaii. The focus is especially to reach those areas which historically had little exposure to such conferences. The WACIPA Advisory Council and the members of the conference will encourage their participation from all states, provinces, and countries within the scope of the conference. All bids will be given equal consideration, regardless of size, population, or location. We recognize that not all AA members will find our conference necessary to their recovery from alcoholism. We seek only to provide it for those who find it desirable. At the Anaheim meeting, the state of Arizona was tentatively chosen as the site for the first WACIPA. The Arizona group was to present their bid in February 1997 at the All California Conference of Young People and Alcoholics Anonymous in San Francisco. Seven AA members volunteered to attend and serve as a temporary advisory council for the purpose of approving Arizona's bid or to solicit further bids at a chosen later date if the Arizona bid was not deemed to serve the best interests of the region. Once an initial site is chosen, a bid session will be held annually at each subsequent WACIPA, where a site will be chosen for the next year's conference. Any group or three or more AA members from within the region is welcome and encouraged to bid for a chance to host a WACIPA in their local area. Each year, AA conferences provide overwhelming evidence that large numbers of alcoholics are achieving lasting and comfortable sobriety in Alcoholics Anonymous. These conferences offer an environment for celebration of our sobriety, as well as an opportunity to meet and share experiences, strength, and hope with AA members who reside in areas other than our own. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Andy. Now I have asked Gina R. to read How It Works.
Hi, my name's Gina. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Gina. We love you, Gina. Lots and lots and lots.
I love you, Gina.
Love you guys, too. This is how it works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates, they are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders. But many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided that you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these, we balked. We thought we could find an easier way, but we could not. With all the earnestness of our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point, and we asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps that we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. 1. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8. made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continue to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry the message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order! I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us have been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear 3 pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if he were sought.
Thank you, Gina. We have now asked Melissa M. To read the 12 traditions.
Hi, everybody. My name is Melissa, and I'm an alcoholic. Love you, too. The 12 traditions. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. 6, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. All right, that's not appropriate. We're going to do that one again. We're better than that. 8, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Really? All right. Right, I should do it again. Yeah. Do it one more time. Sitting next to that guy, muzzle him. All right, one more time. 8, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Thank you. Thank you. 9, AA as such ought never be organized. We're definitely not. But we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. Winning. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And number 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you. Thank you, Melissa. Okay, now I have asked Lori R. and Bill F. to come up and lead us in the sobriety countdown.
For you guys to hump at me. Thank you.
Hi everyone, I'm Bill and I'm an alcoholic.
Okay. Okay. Real quick. Has an open seat next to them, will you please raise your hand so people aren't standing up? And yeah, thank you. Okay. Are you guys ready to do the sobriety countdown?
We would like to ask that everyone please stay seated during the sobriety countdown so we can identify those standing for their time.
The way this works is we'll count down from 50 years of sobriety or to 24 hours or less. So when we call your length of sobriety, you stand up, shout, and dance around. Do we have anyone with 50 to 55 years of sobriety? Aw, shit.
45 to 49 years.
28 years.
Years.
Oh, shit. What did you just do?
27.
26 years. Getting to younger than I am, 20 years.
19 years. 17 years. 15 years.
2 years.
Who's got 1 year?
Four months.
Who's got 29 days? 3 days.
My God, he used to tell me you're an alcoholic, and he said, that's great, sit down and shut up.
Tatiana, I'm an alcoholic.
My name's Forrest, I'm an alcoholic. What's up, everyone? I'm Damien, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, I'm Paige. We love you, Paige. Lots and lots and lots.
My name is Josh. I'm an alcoholic, and I'm getting sober as fuck.
Hi, my name is Jared. I'm an alcoholic.
I'm Randy, I'm an alcoholic, you guys rock.
I'm Sherry and I'm an alcoholic.
What's up, family? Sam, I'm an alcoholic.
Patrick B., the voice of Wacky Paw.
I got a couple of announcements that are really important. Can you guys put it on the screen, the picture of the boy that's missing? We got a boy that's missing. A young man. There he is right there. His name's Nicholas Wasilina. All right, if you see him, here's the phone number. I'm going to go over real slow. 707 area code 483-3049. Or please call the police department. All right, 707-483-3049. If you see him, what up? Is it good? All right.
He's missing since today.
He's missing since today here at 2 a.m. in Las Vegas. Per Carrie Ann. All right, Yuripa, are you guys here?
Yeah.
I got something that belongs to you.
Yeah.
Is Canada here?
Oh, yeah.
Apparently. You guys are lucky because usually what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, but we're going to cut you a break. We're going to cut you a break. You guys came a far way. All right. I have a lot of announcements, so be patient and we're going to get through everything. There's a lot of announcements. I'm going to start with this one because it's on top. Nikki Paw, 2012, the North Shore. Woo! Kauai, September 28th to the 29th and the 30th. I should have said the 28th through the 30th, but it's written like that. A Vision for You. All right. I got a phone number and a website. They have flyers out there. You guys should check it out. Let's go to the bottom. A little bit more. I'm nervous. UC Paw, Utah. Anybody go to UC Paw last year? It was amazing. It was at Zion. They're having another conference. Where's this one going? Moab. Thank you. Check that out. Those kids are amazing. EC Paw is going to be in Northern New York, right? Saratoga Springs, New York, March 30th through April 1st. This is it. I got a local announcement. We're having a corrections workshop with Stan M. of Las Vegas, Saturday, February 4th, 2012, at Salvation Army, 2900 Palomino Lane. Woo! Check that out. That's another one here. Yuri Paw, I got a flyer, guys. I apologize about yesterday. Copenhagen. It's going down July 27th through the 29th. You guys should check it out. Inky Paw, apologize about yesterday, Inky Paw. St. Louis, Missouri, September 13th through the 16th, 2012. They got flyers, they got little cards with little animals on them. They're cute. You should get a few. They're good seat savers. Asty Paw, 2012, Flag Staff, Arizona. There must be a few people here from Arizona. August 17th through the 19th, it's going to Flagstaff. Check that out. SoCali Paw. Four, Orange County, 2012. They have a tentative time for it. Somebody told me it's going to be the first weekend in October. At the Irvine Hyatt, right? The Hyatt? Is it Hyatt? That's where it's going to be at. You need to see them. Bicky Paw, 6. This is Vancouver's Island Conference. BC Paw. All right. Hey, you know, I'm from Henderson. We pronounce stuff different out there. It's going to be November 9th through the 11th. Mickey Paw. All right. This is the Maui Island Campout of Young People and Alcoholics Anonymous. August 3rd through the 5th of 2012. At a YMCA, and I can't pronounce the other word. It's going to be there.
Camp K&I.
It's
my hometown.
It's Carrie Ann's hometown. I better recognize. All right. St. George, Utah, they're going to have the 15th annual Dixie Winterfest, February 10th through the 12th, Lexington Hotel in St. George on Bluff Street. Orky Paw. 29th through the 27th, there's flyers for that as well. Four Corners Summit, the second annual. You guys check this out. It's Powell, Lake Powell, right?
Sure.
I'm going. You should go. All right. The 2012 International Men's Conference is going to be in Las Vegas. They got a two-page color brochure. Check it out. All right, here's a good one. This is good, and they said I could say this, so I'm going to say it. Acupaw. Listen. I got more. That's great. It's awesome. The fire. Hey, if 10 members of your YPOC committee pre-reg for Acupaw, Hillary G will get a name of your committee tattooed on her body. Hey, if you get 10 more, Kelly will do it too. Too. 10 more than that, and their cousin Ryan will do it too. This also includes pre-reg and newcomers, so it's a win-win for everybody, right? Miss Deepa? Newton, Massachusetts? Am I wrong? Massachusetts? Alright. The dates on here are. What's the date? August 1st. All right, you guys should check that out. It's going to be at the Marriott. And then I got more notes. This is important. Did Tyler Oden find his wallet? There's a black wallet out there. And it belongs to Tyler. And if you find it, take it to the hotel's front desk and just turn it in. It sucks to have to go to the DMV and get ID, right? Just give him his ID back, man. I would. That's good, right? It's between you and God. You and God could have worked that out. All right, when this meeting lets out, there's no smoking. Like, just don't go right out the door and light up. I know we like to smoke a lot. But go down a little bit. Go by the pool because people can't get out. We need a flow, a good flow of traffic. And it gets backed up. Hey. I'm going out the back door. I'm Elvis, dude. All right. That's what's up. All right, let's start on. This is my stuff now. Directly after the meeting, the new host committee for the next Wacky Paw 16 will be taking pre-registrations at the same location you registered for this conference at.
Back to the bay!
Do you guys remember where that was at? Yeah. Good. Then you shouldn't have trouble finding it. All right. And so courtesy to them, all other host committees that are out here outreaching, they got to shut down. There's no, like, you can't take pre-registers for any other conferences. Respect to the new host committee and the new host committee should be ready and have everything ready to assemble as soon as they find out. I mean, you need a stack of flyers. Where's it going? I'm trying. Yeah, I can't stop this. Do you feel that? You can't stop that. Congratulations to Mr. Wacky Paw, the MC King, whoever that was. I tried to battle Amaz, but he wasn't having it, you know? Along with the people that won the bingo, I heard some of them prizes were quite interesting. And anybody else that made this weekend what it is, because it was amazing.
Thank you.
I got one more. Late checkout is 1 p.m. tomorrow. You can store your stuff in bellhops. All right? The facility loves us and loves my back. We've done a great job this weekend. And Gina wants you guys to come to the Sunday morning meeting, and so do I. It's going to be amazing. Thanks for letting me be a service. I love you guys.
Thank you. You guys, let's give a big round of applause to Elvis. Elvis has left the building. All right, he left all of his crap up here. There's actually one more announcement, you guys, really quick. Whoever went to yoga this morning, someone took a mat home, and they weren't complimentary, so if you accidentally took a yoga mat this morning, please turn it in to one of the host committee members. We have to return them to who we borrowed them from. Thank you. All right, now, will you all help me please give a hardcore Wacky Paw welcome to our opening speaker, Rhino.
We'll get to that. Rhino alcoholic. Seven. My sobriety day is February 4th, 2002. That means a week from today, if I don't pick up a drink, I'm going to have 10 years sober. I just turned 30 years old. I walked into this program when I was 20. If you're here and you're young, you can stay. It can be done. You know what I mean? Please stay. Please stay. I'd like to thank the committee for all the hard work that they've done. We've been working on bringing this conference here for a long time, man. I was brought to tears yesterday during the slideshow. I saw some pictures that were almost 6 years old. There's some people that are no longer with us, you know, and it's been hitting me right in the cry button all weekend, you know what I mean? And I don't know, I'm incredibly grateful to be here. I grew up in Las Vegas, you know. I don't know if I'd really applaud for that much. It's I don't know, man. It was rough, but you know, I really don't have enough time to go into exactly everything that happened in Vegas, man. So I'm gonna fast forward. It's like this: a guy came to my house looking to kill me one time. That's a true story. My mom was there, and he was beating on the door at 3 o'clock in the morning, and he had a pistol on his waist, and I had a small shotgun with me, and it was shortly after that. Mom said, "Why don't you take off?" And so I went out to LA. Is LA in the house? All right. So I was like, I was working and living in East LA, and was by far the whitest kid in East LA. I was 18 years old, and you know what happened was, like, all the same things happened in L.A. that had happened in Vegas. I found the same people, you know. I'm definitely an alcoholic. When I drink, I get drunk. When I get drunk, I make bad decisions. I run my life into the ground. And, you know, the way that it was like was I like to walk around late at night, early in the morning, getting into people's cars, you know. I had this monster living inside me, and I had to feed it. You know, and I know that if you're in this room, more than likely you understand what that's like. And I ran through everyone and everything that I could or had to get what I needed to from reality. You know, I was an escape artist from reality. More likely than not, what I would do is I would try and persuade you out of it. I would try and talk you out of it, you know, manipulate you, whatever. And if it came down to it, I would just flat out take from you, you know. And I was working for my dad out there in L.A., and I was staying in motels, and I was partying with alcohol and all alcohol's cousins. And then the old man and I and my brother, we moved up to Oxnard. Anybody here from Chiquez? All right, got to Oxnard. Once again, the whitest kid in Oxnard has arrived. I found the same people on the streets in Oxnard, and you know, I stand up here, and you know, it's funny, man. I got complimented a couple times for being in a suit that was all right, and it was funny. Like, people act like, you know, we're in AA. We don't know that a scumbag could get dressed up every once in a while, you know. And I got to tell you guys, like, I think this is truly the first time that I put on a suit and tie where I didn't have, like, an actual adult nearby to be like, hey, man, you know. And so I'm living in Oxnard, California. Everything's getting worse. I get kicked out of my place there. I got nothing to do, nowhere to go. I make a phone call to my aunt. I had been to treatment one time. I was 18. I went to treatment in Tucson, a place called Cottonwood. And it was a pretty upscale place. I didn't feel like I belonged there. A lot of people who came in there with a lot of nice suits and cars and all that stuff. And I was fresh off the streets, you know, and that place didn't, I don't know, man. It was like $30,000, and I think insurance covered half of it. And my dad wrote a bad check for the other part, you know. That's a true story. On my 29th day in that program or whatever, they said, you know, we need to talk to your father. And you know, I left that place, and the only thing I left that place with that was worth anything was a $5 big book at the time, which I still have to this day. I got back to LA and Oxnard, commuting back and forth, working. I everything's going bad. I get kicked out of my place, and I got nothing to do, nowhere to go. I reach out to an aunt of mine down in San Diego. She sends me money for, I'm homeless, and I'm suicidal. I haven't showered, I haven't shaved, you know, I'm wearing the same clothes. I got everything that you can imagine running through my blood that I can get my hands on, man. And I was found by a buddy on a street corner just swaying. And he pulled up and he said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Nothing, I'm chilling, man, what?" And he goes, "Have you eaten?" And I said, "I haven't eaten." "How long has it been?" "It's been about 4 days." And he said, let's go get you some food. So he took me to get me some food. We went to Carl's Jr. and he got me a couple of dollar burgers. And it was January. It was late January, man. It was cold. I was out on the streets, man. I was on a good one, you know what I'm saying? And I'm like licking my lips and they're all chapped, you know what I mean? And so I go to take a bite of this burger and I pull it away and there's blood all over the burger from where these sores on my lip had split open. And he goes, what, you thirsty, man? What do you want? And I said, I want some beer, dude. So he took me to get some beer, and I had some beer and I took a drink of the beer and it stung and the sores on my mouth. But you know what? Right at that moment, I had everything that I needed to make my head shut up. I just needed something to be in me, man. You know, I can't sit still. You know, I can't sit still. I can't be in one place. I can't turn my mind off. What I need is I need a drink all the time, a drink or a drug, something. And I had that, and it shut my head off, you know. And what happened was I hustled up a little bit, my man, and I got into a motel, and I knew it was down to the bitter end, dude. It was down to the bitter end. I just couldn't go on anymore. And I made a phone call to my aunt in San Diego, and she sent me some Greyhound money. And she sent me $60. To this day, going to purchase a Greyhound ticket with that $60 was like the hardest thing I've ever done. And it was $30. It was a $30 ticket. I had $30 in my pocket, and I was 2 hours early for the bus. And you know, I hear some people, man, they know what that's like, you know. I'm an alcoholic, man. I can't have 30 bucks in my pocket when I'm on one, you know what I mean? It just ain't gonna work. And I got on that bus and I went down to San Diego. I got off that bus at the Greyhound station downtown. Let me tell you something, man. I haven't really showered. I rinsed off in that motel room, but I put on all the same clothes that I was wearing on the streets, man, and I had that smell. You guys know what I'm talking about? And I got off this bus, and there was this girl working in this blimpy sub sandwich shop that was pretty cute, right? So I come, like, sliding up to her, like... I'm watching this girl about to call security on me, right? And I actually, you know what? Delusions of grandeur, you know what I mean? I thought I was going to get this girl's number and everything would be all right. And no, my uncle found me. And they took me to the house. They took me to the house. And I laid on a little foam mattress in the back of my aunt and uncle's house and with $30 in my pocket and stayed there that night. And I woke up and drew my first sober breath on the morning of February 4th, 2002. And had no idea what I was going to do. No idea. My aunt, she's been sober longer than I've been alive. She got sober in 1980. You know, and that was why she knew what to do with me. She knows this disease. She knows what it does to people. She's watched it be like a tornado in our family's lives. And so I'm in the back of their house, and I have no idea what I'm going to do. And she tells me she wants me to call this place in Escondido. Escondido in the house? I got sober at the Fellowship Center in Escondido. Yeah. And I started calling this place, asking them for a bed. And it took about a week, but they got me in there. And I remember I was, you know, I'm fresh off the streets, man. And, you know, I'm not a tough guy, dude. I'm not a tough guy, but I'm fear-driven. And I can't keep my hands to myself. I can't take direction from people. I can't look you in the eye. I can't keep my hands off of your belongings. You know what I mean? And I show up to this place, and they let me come into this place, and they explain to me the rules. You know, you're going to be up at 6 a.m. with your bed made. You're not going to steal anything. There's no fighting. You're going to attend meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous or Narcotics Anonymous, whatever you choose. And so I come into this place, and I remember laying there and falling asleep the first time, and I woke up. And there was a guy named Butch kicking my bed at 6:01 a.m. asking me why the F I wasn't up out of bed, making, you know, with my bed made. I remember thinking, this isn't going to work. You know what I mean? I don't know. I don't know about all that, you know. And what I'll say about that facility right there is that it saved my life. It got me to Alcoholics Anonymous. I met my first sponsor, who was Ray L. He sponsored me for almost 5 years. And you know, what happened was I learned how to be a human being. I took the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I got in touch with my creator. I learned what it was to make an amends to someone and to do it, like he said, eyeball to eyeball. You know, I took a year, and I moved out of that place, and I got a job. And I told you, man, I ran around with cholos. I was a white kid, but I knew how to crease up some Gorilla Cut Ben Davis. You know what I mean? And I knew how to crease up the tall white tees and wear fitted hats and all that stuff. And, you know, my first job was working at McDonald's. And, you know, so I'm like, I'm gangster, right? And I'm in there slanging French fries for a clown. And, you know, just keeping it humble, dude, walking to work, walking to a meeting, and then walking home, you know, and that was how I lived. And I don't know, man, I got to say some things. When I found, you know, I walked into AA at 20, and there's a Tuesday night men's stag that I found in Escondido that saved my life. And I think the youngest dude in the room at the time was 35, besides me, and they called him Kid. You know, I just did that. I did Alcoholics Anonymous, and slowly things got better. I started painting houses. I got out of McDonald's, you know. And I remember I was griping in a meeting one time about how, like, I think it was like Slayer was coming to town, you know. Slayer. And I wanted to go see Slayer, and none of these, like, 58, you know, 63-year-old dudes wanted to go see Slayer with me. So this guy Ken goes, you know, hey, man, I know where there's a meeting in Oceanside on Saturday night. It's a young people's meeting called Tri-City. Why don't you go check it out? And so I did, and that was how I found YPAW, man. I was almost 3 years sober. I found young people's AA when I was almost 3 years sober. And I went there, and this group took an inventory the same night that I went there for the first time, and I was so impressed with the way the meeting was. I got a commitment my first night, which is what I was taught to do, and I kept coming back to that group, and I got to know those people, and those people became my family, you know. And through a turn of events, I wound up living with a few of those people, and they changed my life. They taught me what it was to really stick together, to take care of each other. We're young. We're here. We're here for the same reason, and how to have fun. You know what I mean? Because what do I want to be sober for? I remember what it was like when I was loaded. What do I want to feel all these feelings and this pain and everything? What do I want to do that for if I can't have fun? You know what I mean? If I can't enjoy life. And that was what I learned there, you know. And I remember I became ready for a change of venue, you know. I was ready for a career change, and you know, I wanted to like spread my wings a little bit from where I was, and I wanted to come back to Vegas. You know, I got family here. My mom's in the house tonight. Give it up for my mom, dude. Let me tell you, dude, this poor lady. You know what I mean? I'm sober now, and I'm self-supporting through my own contributions, and I wanted to come back to Vegas and become a crane operator. And that was what I wanted to do, you know. And I remember I was living with these people, and they helped me out, and Alcoholics Anonymous held my hand, you know, and I did that. And I moved back here, and I attained that, you know. And when I came back here with a fire for young people's AA that, you know, that I caught down in San Diego. And when I got to Vegas... It was rough, man. There wasn't a lot of unity at the time. It was just kind of getting off the ground. There were a couple of young people's meetings that were happening, and you know, there wasn't a lot of fellowshipping going on, and I tried to contribute what I could, you know, and it was a little hard, you know. I remember when Livy Paw formed, and we decided that we wanted to go after Wacky Paw. You know, and it's been a long road, you know, it's been a long road. And I want to say that to be standing up here as a host committee means the world to me. And I want to thank you guys, you know, for being here. How am I doing on time? Am I finishing early? Well, you know, I want to tell you guys that I had a lot of time to think about, you know, some things that I was going to say and some people that I've been missing over the years, you know. And Billy L., Jason D., David D., Ben L., Joni A., and Bill B. are all people that have passed away from this disease, you know. They're not with us today. And the reason that we're here tonight is to bring this conference to the kids that, you know, are from the city that have never seen this before. You know, and that's Josh C., Tyler M., Andrea A., Brianna A., Leticia M. All you guys are like families to me, you know? And I don't know, I feel like I did horrible, and man, I'm choking. I love you guys. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Rhino. You did great. Let's see. So, and now, ladies and gentlemen, would you all please join me in giving a fabulous Wacky Paw welcome to tonight's main speaker, Angie P. from Cincinnati, Ohio.
Thank the committee for asking me to come here, and I've had a great hostess whose name is Magali, and I appreciate you so much. And for my girl Alexis and that ride around the city last night, that was awesome. And for Gina, who stayed in contact with me for the past year. And I want to say to you, Gina, that was extremely courageous what you did, because you didn't have to get up and let anybody know. And so I thought that was very courageous. I am originally from Greenville, South Carolina. Anybody from South Carolina in the house? Right, that's what I thought. And I'm from Greenville, South Carolina, and I'm from a family of Baptist ministers. I had flaming red hair and freckles, and nobody else in my family did. And one day my brother had me locked in the outhouse, and he said, "I know why you look the way you do." He said, "Because the mailman is your daddy." So whenever I saw the mailman coming down the street, I was like, "Daddy!" And I would run up to him, and he would put his arms around me and tell me how cute I was. And, you know, thank God for the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous and sponsorship. I found out that turned out to be a little pattern for me, actually, that... that if you just pat me on my head and tell me how cute I was, we were basically married at that point. And 6 months down the road, I'm going, "What's your last name again?" Right. So we got, my father got transferred to Cincinnati, Ohio, and in the process of traveling back and forth, he found himself a little girlfriend and moved us up to Ohio. But then when we moved up there, he went to live with this woman and her children, and that left my mother to raise my brother and sister and myself. And you'll hear me talk a lot about my mother. My mother is struggling with Alzheimer's right now. And I'll tell you what, I have spent countless hours in my room this weekend. Just waiting to hear how my mother's doing. My mother has a tendency to just leave and nobody know where she is. And I'll tell you, it's been one of the hardest things that I've had to deal with in my sobriety, but let me share a little bit of information with you. That if it were not for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and the people who have loved me through this thus far, I don't know where I'd be. On my 20th anniversary, I went to my mother's house to tell her and thank her for being a vital part of my sobriety. And when I walked in the house, she had no idea who I was. And you know what I realized from that? I don't know if she'll ever come back. But what I realized from that is, thank God she got to know me. and she got to see me sober. Thank God. So we moved to this little town in Ohio called Lachlan, and they said we lived in the projects. It was just two buildings, but they said it was the projects. And my mother always believed in education, and it was really important to her that we get educated, because back home she cleaned bathrooms for a living, and she didn't want us to ever have to do work like that. So my mother sent us to Catholic school. So now I'm going to this Catholic school. I got a flaming red afro, a white blouse, a plaid skirt, and Bobby socks and black and white shoes, and I got beat up on a regular basis because it just didn't look normal. I looked at me every day. Trust me, I had never seen a black person with red hair and freckles, so as far as I was concerned, I was the only one in the entire world. And so one day this girl named Squeaky. Squeaky was like 6'10 in the fifth grade, and she had a posse of her friends that used to beat people up that was different, and I was one of them. So one day they stole me on the way home from school, and I ran in the house and I told my mother, I said, "Whew, I'm glad I made it in the house. They're about to kill me." And I knew when my mother sounded like this, it was trouble. She goes, "You know, Angela, at some point you got to learn how to stand up for yourself." She said, "So you go out there in that parking lot and you stand up to Squeaky, or you stay in here and you take this butt whooping that I'm gonna give you." And I knew what my mother felt like, and I only knew what Squeaky's appeared to be, you know what I mean? So I went out in the parking lot, and she was standing there, and I looked up at her, and I said, "My mother said that's a lie." I said, "My mother said I'm supposed to fight you." And she said, "Well, come on in." So I don't know if you guys have experienced this thing in your head called the committee. But man, mine was sick that day. So I'm standing in front of her. She's 6'10". And I balled my fist up as tight as I could. And I closed my eyes as tight as I could. And the committee was going, "Hit her. Hit her now. Just reach up with your left." And the other one's going, "She gonna kill you. She is gonna kill you." And the other one's going, "The hell with that. Let's do it, dude." So I close my eyes and I reach up. I get her right here, man. Right in the jaw. It was like the happiest day of my damn life, man. Listen to you guys applauding violence. Wonderful. Beautiful. Beautiful. So I got this thing called alcoholism, right? That helps me remember what I should forget and forget what I should remember. And what I remember was that I hit her. What I forgot was that she damn near beat me to death. But see, in my head, now she is whooping on me something terrible. My mother's looking out the screen door. My mother said, "Lord, let me go get my child." So she goes over, she pulls this big Amazon off of me. And when she pulls me up, I go like this to my mother. And she goes, "Angie, really, come on." So that started my fighting career. Anybody that said anything to me out of the way, my first deal was, because even in that fight where Squeaky damn near killed me, I still was the winner. Because I got this thing called alcoholism. I've got this problem with my perception. Things that happen don't necessarily happen the way that I see them. So there's the truth, and then there's the truth as it's known by Angie. So my mother comes again. My mother got a job. She was working at a restaurant at first, and she ended up getting another job, and she moved us to our first house since we had got there, and it was in an all-white neighborhood. And so from the age of, I don't know, 13 to 20, I wasn't even black anymore. I listened to Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band, and my favorite girl group was Heart, and the first concert I ever went to was Led Zeppelin, 1979. Now listen, I'm at the Ted Nugent Foreigner concert one night, right? Foreigners singing it. Feels like the first time. I looked around that Coliseum. It was like 20,000 white people and me. And I remember thinking, I am bad. Woo! And I left that Coliseum that night
legend in my own mind. And I knew that there was none better than me. And I started hanging out with these five white girls, right? And they could do whatever the hell they wanted to do. I didn't understand it. But one night I'm at my friend Rebecca's house. And her mother comes downstairs. We're in the basement with her brothers. And her mother comes downstairs and she goes, "Family meeting." And the whole damn house rose up like a choir and went upstairs. I had never seen anything like it. So I went to the family meeting. And the first thing that Becky's mother goes is, "Rebecca." That's my white woman voice. "Rebecca." "Rebecca, your father and I have been communicating. And Rebecca, we understand that there's been some alcohol consumption, and your father and I have discussed it, and we would feel that if you would drink at home, it would be safer." I said, "What the hell did your mother just say?" She goes, "Yeah, she wants us to drink at home. It's safer." I thought that was the closest family I'd ever met in my life. I remember I went home, and I was like, "Mama, can I have a beer?" And she goes, "No." I said, "Okay, I'm going down to Becky's." And I hung out down at Becky's house on a regular basis. And one day, Rebecca comes over to my house, and she has a brown bag and two bottles, and it was Boone's Farm apple wine. Look at this brother over here. He's like, "Boone's Farm, yes, Boone's Farm. Get sober, dude." So check this out. Rebecca says her brothers had schooled her in the art of chugging, and that we had to turn these bottles up and drink as long and as hard as we could. I did, and what happened to me, I don't think happened to my friend Rebecca. Because something hit the bottom of my feet, and it rose slowly through my entire body. And on that journey up to my head, my hair wasn't red anymore. My freckles left individually. And I was funny. And me and Rebecca drank, and we had us a blast that night. And I made a conscious decision that evening that any chance I get, I'm going to drink this. And I meant that, and that's what I set out to do. I started drinking and hanging out. And I don't mean any disrespect. There's a couple little drug stories in here, but don't leave. Stay put. I smoked a little marijuana. Didn't really like it. Seemed like I ate everything that had been in people's freezers for 10 years. My response to everything was, "Whoa." They set my afro on fire at school, and it's burning. And they're going, "Pepper, your hair's on fire." And I'm like, "Whoa." You know, so I'm walking around school with little burnt knots on my head, as if that's really okay. And so I'm hanging out with these girls, and, you know, one day we're riding around. My friend Terry had a little red Mustang, and we were riding around in it, and I was driving. Two of them was in the back seat. And so my friend Rebecca gave me these two little pills. She said, "Take them. Only take one, though, but you know how many I took. I took two. And it was strawberry mescaline. And so you guys have been having a good time, haven't you? And so I take these two little pills, which is the size they were. I didn't think it would do much, but we're heading down the road, and all of a sudden one of them yells from the back seat, "Let's go to McDonald's." And it seemed like as soon as she said that, that acid kicked in. Because it seemed like the car just went, and the steering wheel just went. And the light to the McDonald's arch was so hot that I had my sunglasses over here. And I'm driving into McDonald's like this. So we get up to this little box. We get up to this little box, and there's, you know, this guy. And, "What do you want? What do you want? You know, what do you want?" And so I'm an alcoholic. You attack me, I'm going to attack your ass back. You know? So he, "Where you on? What do you want?" I said, "No, dude. No, what do you and your little people want with me?" You know? And so I'm arguing back and forth with him, and it just wasn't pretty. And we get up to the next window, and some chick in there's got eyelashes like this long, and you know, she's asking me for my money, and I'm stuck. I can't even look her way anymore. And
And we go to the next window, and there's some guy there with one of the biggest visors I'd ever seen in my life. And he's going, do you want salt or ketchup? Salt or ketchup? So I froze at that point, and I couldn't even drive on any further. And they ended up calling the police because the drive-thru was backed up to the street. And so the police officer comes, and, you know, he gets out of his car, and he starts walking towards me, and everything on him is just jiggling. I tell you, that acid had me gone. It was just jiggling, walking towards me. I said, what the hell? So he gets up to me, and he goes, what? What seems to be me? I was like, you know what, officer, why don't you just open up this door and put some cuffs on me, because I can see where this is going right now. So I ended up going to jail, and they called my mother, because they asked me my name, and I told them it was like Luke Skywalker, and they didn't take too kindly to falsifying, and so they ended up calling my parents, and my mother said, well, just make sure she stays warm, and that was my first bout with jail, and so I'm still hanging out. I get out of jail. I'm hanging out with these girls. I'm drinking. No, didn't feel like listening to my parents. Didn't need to listen to them anymore. What they said was stupid all the time. You know what I mean? It just didn't make sense. I felt like they were trying to keep me down. They were holding me down. I was oppressed. And I had to do what I had to do. And that was drink. And if you're an artist like I am, you just know that the day's going to come when somebody's just going to discover you. You know, that's what I waited for all my life, for somebody just to discover me. I mean, I wouldn't even be singing at the time. They would just come in and look at me and go, do you sing? My name's Bob from Epic Records. I just happen to have a contract. That's how they thought. I thought they were going to discover me. And my daddy got me a job at a recording studio. And I was in the bathroom. I hit my best Whitney Houston. And I know. And so I come out of the bathroom, and this guy goes, hey, was that you singing? I said, yeah, as a matter of fact, it was. He said, you know, I can make you famous. Really? He said, all you got to do is come to Vegas with me. No problem. So I went home, and I called a family meeting. And when everybody got to the house, I told my family, I'll be back for you all. As soon as I get my first Grammy, I shall return and we will no longer live in poverty. And my mother goes, we don't live in poverty. I'll be back for you. And my little sister goes, Angie, please don't leave. And my father goes, baby girl, don't do that. And my mother was like... And so I set out with this guy, and I came out here to Las Vegas, and I was a young girl singing and making a lot of money and having the time of my life. Alcohol was flowing freely, and I was as drunk as you could be. I was on stage in the middle of songs just crying and taking my shirt off. And you know what we do. I know some of you girls might not have that problem, but I put alcohol in my system, my shirt automatically comes off. You just know that's going to happen. It's a sense of freedom because of the oppression, but it just always came out. I'm swinging it. It was on a slow song. You know what I mean? So a lot of people had issues with my drinking. So I'm in Vegas, and I'm hanging out with this gentleman who was supposed to have my best interest at heart, and he had a little affliction himself, and he was struggling with a little heroin problem. And so here we are, and I'm starting to get fired from jobs because of my drinking. He's got his little problem, and one night I'm drunk, and he asked me if I wanted some. And I don't know about you, but when I'm drunk and you ask me if I want some other substance, 9 times out of 10, I'm going to tell you yes. And what that guy did was introduce me to shooting heroin intravenously. And so now I'm out here, I'm stuck, I'm losing jobs, I can't work, and one day we're leaving in this seedy hotel, and one day this guy comes and gets me and tells me that he needs me to drive him to the store. And when I drove him to the store, he went in and he shot and he killed the owner and he robbed the place. And that would then leave me and him in some big, big trouble. And a few blocks down the road, we had guns to our head. And we were both arrested. And I need to tell you that this gentleman is still in prison to this day. And I was kicked out of the state of Nevada. And here I am today. Welcome. Nobody could find me today, and there was a reason for that. It's because I had two big amends that I had to make today. And thank God for his mercy and his grace. Because all that woman told me was for me to continue doing what I'm doing and continue to carry the message that I'm carrying, that she held no grudges and that she held no resentment.
Love you, Angie.
I love you too. It was a long time coming, you guys. And when it talks about us being happy, joyous, and free, I had something that ate at the core of my being for the last 20-something years. And I was able to free myself today. So anyway, I get kicked out of Nevada and I go back home. And I tell my family, that's it. No more drinking for me. And I meant that from the bottom of my heart, y'all. And it lasted all of 2 weeks. Because I didn't know that I had alcoholism and that it dictated when I drank. And it dictated where I lived. And it dictated who I hung out with. And it dictated whether or not I took care of my children. And it dictated whether or not I completed school. And it dictated whether or not I completed college. I was wrapped up in the horrors of alcoholism, and I didn't even know what it was. And I started drinking after 2 weeks, and I'm hanging downtown on the streets of downtown Cincinnati. And I meet these three guys, No Neck, Greasy Fee, and Tie-Dye. And these guys, I thought they were brilliant. These guys took me into department stores and watched while I put a girdle on, roll up outfits, stick them around that girdle, come out and sell them for the remarkably low price of my friends. But when I got arrested for stealing in that department store, I never saw those guys again, my friends. And I end up getting in trouble and getting arrested. And I go to jail and I take a physical and I find out that I'm pregnant. And I'm going to tell you something. I got sentenced 7 to 25 to the Ohio Reformatory for Women. And the only thing that kept me sane was the fact that my child was growing on the inside of me. And I would rub my stomach every single day, man. And I would say, you're going to have a better life. I'm going to knock this off. I mean it. And I meant that from the bottom of my heart. What I didn't know that I was powerless over alcohol and that it dictated and managed what I did. When I got out of the penitentiary, my son was 4 years old. All I could think about on that Greyhound bus heading home was holding his hand, hugging him, taking him for a walk, just hanging out with my baby. I got to the Greyhound bus station, and if you knew in this room and you got that big book that they gave you, it's in More About Alcoholism. It said suddenly the thought crossed his mind that he could put a little whiskey in his milk. He sensed he wasn't being a bit too smart. Suddenly the thought crossed my mind that one drink won't hurt me. And I went in that bar and my son would be 10 years old before I saw him again. Because when I put alcohol in my system, what happens to me don't happen to my brother. My brother drinks a beer, he takes his ass to work. I drink a beer, I'm on the evening news. That's the difference between me and my brother's drinking. So I'm hanging out downtown. I get my freedom. I'm drinking, hanging out downtown. Nowhere to live. Nothing to do. Just hanging out. A drunk. Drinking wine. Hanging out with people I didn't even know. Drinking behind people I didn't even know. Wasn't even sure where these people were from. But I drank with them. And they were my friends. I chose those people over people that actually loved me. That was my family. I drank with them. This one particular day, I'm walking from Vine Street down to the river, because I need to tell you, by this time, I'm living on the banks of the Ohio River in a boarding house for women, for wayward women. So I'm staying in this boarding house. I'm going back and forth to the bar. You can live there for free because I was indigent. So I'm staying in this boarding house. I'm walking back and forth, drinking and hanging out at the bar. I meet some guy. He asked me if I want to go and do other substances with him. Sure. I go with him. Instead of him putting drugs in a syringe, he puts ice water. And he shoots ice water into my veins. And I left that guy's house. I got a bottle of wine in my hand. And with every step I took, I just saying, God, please, don't let me die like this. Don't let me die like this. I got to that boarding house, and it was a little blonde woman standing at the front door. This little woman looked at me, and she said, you don't have to keep living like that. And I said, you don't understand. I'm sick. This is what dude just did, and I'm sick. She went to my room, and she put a wet rag on my head, and she began to tell me about her drinking. She asked me to go someplace with her, and I said, yeah, because if it meant I would feel better, I would have went anywhere with anybody. And she took me to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, we go to this clubhouse. If you're ever in Cincinnati, Ohio, it's 405 Oak Street. It's a big old clubhouse. Now, I'm walking up the walk. It's a nice day. Bunch of white people, white cups. Some guy playing the guitar, singing John Denver songs. And I'm walking up the walk, and these guys, these old men are reaching their hand out going, hey, welcome. I'm Wino Bill. I'm Big Book Tom. I'm 12 and 12 Timothy. And I was like, well, they got interesting nicknames, but it looked like it could be an interesting party. So I'm going up the steps into the clubhouse. This big biker guy grabs me and goes, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Squirrel. I said, Squirrel, man, you're about to put me down, bro. He said, welcome to AA. I said, AA? I am in AA. I was like, oh, sister, you done hit an all-time low. You are in AA. So we go into the meeting. She says, let's sit on this side of the room because some guy's getting ready to get up and he's going to tell his story. So this old white guy gets up. And he talked about beating his wife. And it seemed like y'all clapped at every damn thing. See? That's what I mean. He said, I used to beat my wife. I ain't had her in a headlock in 2 weeks. And I ain't had a drink of alcohol today. And y'all were like, bravo! And I said, what the hell? So then, he keeps on talking, and y'all just thought he was so amazing. I figured he was the president of this organization. And y'all just clapped and laughed, and I was appalled. And I said, why is that white man up there telling all his business like that? Ain't he got no shame at all? And so she said afterwards, she said, now it's traditional that we go and thank the speaker when we're done. I said, well, good, because I got something I want to say to him. So then everybody rose up like a choir and everybody held hands. Oh, it was just like, we are the world. You know what I mean? Everybody held hands. Then they started chanting some stuff. Keep coming back. It works if you, I could never ever get the other part. It works if you, you know, smirk it. Keep coming back. It works if you, you know, keep coming back. It squirts if you jerk it. You know what I mean? I don't.
just so my sponsor don't hear it. That's the one thing she told me not to say. So anyway, I hung around AA for a while, and, you know, I went to your meeting and climbed your stairs and, you know, did that whole deal. And about this time, people started coming into AA with this little crack problem. I know they probably don't do that here. But in Cincinnati, they was coming into AA with this little crack problem. So everybody walking in, they coming in by the droves, you know. Everybody weighs 60 pounds and, you know, their eyes were bugged and, you know. And I was like, crack? I said, well, sit over there. Just don't say nothing to nobody. Maybe they'll come up with a Crackaholics Anonymous. But for right now, you're in Alcoholics Anonymous. So just sit over there and be cool and I'll sponsor you. And so I was, every day I was reading a big book to them real loud, and I wouldn't let them go to the bathroom, and, you know, just insanity, insanity. And one day I was sitting at a meeting, and suddenly the thought crossed my mind that, you know, y'all were talking about God using you as an instrument. I said, you know what, I think God using me as an instrument too. I think he want me to go out and find some black people and bring them into AA. And that's why I was placed here. Not because I really have any kind of drinking issue, but because somebody has to lead the people in. And that would be me. So it was Wednesday night, and I was sitting at an AA meeting, and they asked if there was any AA announcement. So I raised my hand. And I said, yeah, look here, I'm going to roll on out of here. Thank y'all for the real big book and everything, but I got to go help some people. And, you know, I hope y'all know that alcohol is bad for you and that it'll kill you if you keep drinking it. And you know how old timers are, how, you know, sensitive they are. So this one goes, well, get out of here then. There's people trying to stay sober in here. We'll see you if you make it back. I was like, Mr. Old Timer, I don't need to come back. And he goes, oh, you'll be back. So I took the big book and I started walking down the road, and I got on the number 43 bus. But prior to me getting on the bus, I said, if I see one black person drunk, I'm going to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I'm on the bus for a minute and a brother gets on, drunk as he could be. I said, bingo. I slid over next to him on the bus. I said, look here, my brother. I said, you been drinking? He said, yeah, I had a little something, something. I said, you know, you might be an alcoholic. He said, I ain't no damn alcoholic. So he cussed me out. And I said, you know, the people at the AA club told me that you would probably react to my information like this. So I guess the best thing that I can do is give it to you the only way that you can hear it and the only way that I know how. And so I took that big book and I opened it up to chapter 5, and I stood in the aisle of that bus, and I said, really? Did you hear what I said? I said, rarely have we seen a person fail. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. I said, those who do not recover are those who are constitutively incapable of being honest. And the bus driver said, oh, hell no, you got to get... He said, you got to get off this bus, sister. And I said, and you, oh, Mr. Bus Driver, are an alcoholic too. And so... So I took my big book and I went on down the road where I knew it was some black drunks. And I walked into the bar and they were on the dance floor dancing, acting like they were having a good time. But I knew that they were in pain because I had been in AA. And you guys had told us about all the masks that we wear. And I said, you know, they jamming and everything, but they probably crying on the inside. So I went and I snatched that plug out the jukebox. I said, black drunks, they got a place for you. It's called the AA Club, and you never have to drink again. And they said, well, what you doing down here? I said, I graduated. And step 17 say I'm supposed to help y'all. So they said, girl, if you don't plug that jukebox in, we'll kill you. I said, you know, the people at the AA Club told me you would probably react like this to my information. So I'm going to give it to you the only way that you can probably receive it and the only way that I know how. So I opened up that big book and I sat on that bar stool and crossed my legs and I said, really? Did you hear what I said? I said, really? Have we seen a person fail who is thoroughly followed up? I said, those who do not recover are those who are constitutionally incapable. And the bar owner said, get your ass out of here. I'm trying to make money. I said, they coming for you, Mr. Bar Owner. So I stood outside there and was reading the big book to the passerbyers. And suddenly the thought crossed my mind that surely one drink won't hurt me. You guys are so funny. They're like, oh, God. It's not over. But so I went back in the bar and I had me a little drink or two. And, and 45 minutes later, I was in a crack house. I ain't know nothing about that stuff. And I'm going to tell you this. I'm an alcoholic. I am an alcoholic. I am well aware of that. But that damn crack, woo! When I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous, June the 20th, 1991, I was 60 pounds. My hair had been matted all to my head. My skin was dark. My lips were black. My fingers were burnt. My stomach was protruding. And I was at alcoholism at its best. And I walked back in that clubhouse with all the shame and guilt that we have when we come to AA and we leave again. See, that's one of the reasons why I don't give people a hard time when they go out and they come back. Because every time that I said I was going to quit, I meant that from the bottom of my heart. But I knew nothing about alcoholism. Didn't even know I had it. But to the untrained eye, we appeared liars. We let them down. But I know today it was alcoholism. And I went back into that clubhouse, and when I walked back in, that old timer that was at that Wednesday night meeting was working the coffee bar. When he looked at me, he said, Angie, you're going to die. I said, I know. I know, and I need you to help me. And he reached up on that shelf, and he got the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he told me that he wanted me to read the first 164 pages, that I could sit right outside and read it, because it wasn't like I had a home. Wasn't like I had a job. He said, I want you to go to the front door and reach your hand out to people and tell them your name and that you're an alcoholic. And I stood at that door as dirty and as stinking as I was, man. I stood at the door with my hand out. And I said, my name is Angie, and I'm an alcoholic. And people pulled away from me based on the way that I looked. See, we can't get too good in here that we forget. Because, see, we could forget, and that next person that's talking to themselves that's stinking and dirty could be your next young people speaker. And I stood at that door and I kept pushing my hand at people. And I read that book. I'm the wrong person to talk to if you think that you can't get sober because you don't have a home. I didn't have a home. I was homeless. Everything I owned was in a plastic bag. I'm the wrong person to talk to if you think that you can't get sober because you don't have a job. I was unemployable. I had never worked a job. The only thing that I ever did was sing. You guys taught me when I began to go to work in Alcoholics Anonymous, you're the ones that told me that you cannot get your boss in a headlock because he say you can't have Saturday night off. Y'all taught me all this stuff. Because I came into Alcoholics Anonymous June the 20th, 1991, reduced to animal level. But I knew one thing for sure, y'all, and another thing for certain was that I knew that I did not want to go back out there. And whatever I had to do, please tell me what I got to do, and I'll do it. Because I was properly horrified and thoroughly convinced that when I put alcohol in my system, it ain't the second or the third. It's the first one. Please show me how to stop. So I told you I left school, didn't have an education. I got my GED in AA.
and I went on to college. Let me tell you about my children. My son is 29 years old, and he's in prison right now doing more time than he's been alive. And I have a beautiful daughter who's 24 years old, who just graduated from Grambling State University. Not by anything that I've done, you guys. Because at 3 years sober, my family asked me if I would step out of my children's life and allow them to have the same opportunities that I had. And I was unable to take care of my kids. And I went to my sponsor and I told him what my parents had asked me to do. And I stepped out of their lives. And it was the hardest decision I ever made. But it was the most selfless one I ever made. And I had to watch my kids go to school across the street in somebody's driveway. And I went to my daughter's soccer games and she never knew I was there. And I went to my son's basketball games and he never knew I was there, but I had to see him. I had to see him. And on my daughter's 18th birthday, she called me. And she said, I need to talk to you. And I went and I picked her up. And we went to the mall and she spent all my damn money. And I said, you know what? I'm going to have to be a little more specific with God. I'm going to have to say, God, I like to see my children, but I'd like to have a little change in my pocket after it's all over. So we shopped, and on the way back, I was driving her home, man. And she put her head on my shoulder. And she said, Mama, you okay? And I said, I'm all right. I said, I just want you to know that it wasn't a day that went by that I didn't think about you, and that I did what I thought was best for you. And when I dropped her off, she said, you know, I can't hang out with you because it'll cause too much. I said, no problem. My prayer's been answered. And I made amends to my son, who I believe is one of us. And when my son committed the crime that he committed, and they beat a man within an inch of his life, every day that he got, I felt like he should have got. I pray for him, and I thank God for people that take AA into prisons, because my son is now an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Come on, time. Oh, look, she got an iPhone. Mm. Anyway. So, I don't know, you guys. I've had a great life in Alcoholics Anonymous. In 2005, I got a phone call from New York, and they wanted me to be the opening speaker at the International in Toronto. And I wasn't even going because they said that they wasn't letting people with felonies into Canada, and I have quite a few. So I knew they weren't going to let me in. And so dude called me, and I picked up the phone, and I was like, hello? He said, yes, my name is so-and-so from World Services in New York, and we'd like to know if you want to be the opening speaker at the International. I was like, Tony, man, why are you always playing on my damn phone? Don't call back no more. So I went in, I looked at the caller ID, and it said New York. I was like, yeah, my bad. So I went up there, man, and I got to speak at the International, man, and it was a life changer for me. I've been traveling to places that I only saw in brochures, and God has just been really good to me. I'm going to share this with you. Back home, my grandmother used to sing this song, and I never knew the meaning of it until that night when I got up on that stage and I carried the message to 60,000 alcoholics. And I am going to close with this, if you don't mind.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. See, I was lost, but now I'm found. I was blind, but now I see. Thank you, Wacky Pop.
My name's Anna, and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you. First of all, I just want to take another moment to recognize the host committee. You guys have done an amazing job this year. From that committee are three new advisory members, Amaz, Dane, and Lori, if they could come up to the stage. Amaz. Oh, Amaz. I'd also like to take a second to recognize all past advisory members on Wacky Pop. You guys could just stand up and be acknowledged for your service. To the Las Vegas Central Office for bringing archives and the Grapevine for attending the conference. We also have another very special lady in the room that I'd like to ask to come up here. That's Jerry. Is Jerry here?
There she is.
Okay. Jerry is the manager of Alexis Park, and she has been working with us very hard all year to make this conference happen for us.
Hi, everybody.
Lots and lots and lots.
come to love you guys too.
This is for you. This is for you, Jared.
Thank you. I just want to say, like, this has been a long time in the planning, and this started out with Dane expressing an interest in us qualifying to submit a bid to host you and walking us through the steps. And, you know, we're very honored to have you here. Usually our staff can be kind of cantankerous and cranky, especially with things that go beyond like the normal hours. And, you know, you all just seem to be like nocturnal, at least for this weekend. Drunk us out of all the energy drinks that we were trying. And if you weren't going to a different city next year, as your practice is, we'd be happy to invite you back here.
Moving forward, we'll try and be really quick. This year we decided to give you guys a few brief highlights of some of the things that has happened throughout the year with Wacky Paw. I know, we're getting there. One day. From our web chair, we have on our website is now available in Spanish. From our treasurer, we are now officially recognized as a nonprofit organization by the IRS. Mexican National Liaison. This past year, we were able to send Erica and Jared to outreach in the 10th National Convention of Alcoholics Anonymous in Mexico City. From our First Nations Native American Liaisons, we were able to send Steve to the Native American Indian AA Convention in Las Vegas. As well, we sent Jared to a New Year's powwow hosted by NARA. We are almost done. We would also like to welcome, as I'm sure everyone knows, Texas to the Wacky Paw region. And lastly, two other items of business. One, a bylaw change at bylaw 6.7, distribution of funds. We voted to change our conference support fund from $3,000 to $15,000. We did this because we felt $3,000 was not an accurate amount of money to host or financially support a conference if things went pear-shaped. In order to obtain that and work towards saving that amount and to help Wacky Paw become more self-supporting, we altered bid requirement 8, which previously stated that the host split proceeds 50-50 with advisory. It will now read that the host split conference proceeds 75% with advisory and 25% stays with the host. This will not go into effect until next year, just so you know. So all the people that bid this year, it doesn't actually affect them. If anyone has any questions, they can talk to us after the meeting, or you can attend our business meetings, which are open. That's all from me. Oh, yeah, sadly, we need to, before I introduce your new advisory council and their positions, I just want to say goodbye to Rhonda, who's rotating off. She was our archivist. And to myself, I'm rotating off this year. And spirit of rotation. But I'm not getting emotional. I told myself that. So I'm going to pass it on. Do we have a... We need a mic, a free mic. Can I have one? Like a traveling mic?
Okay,
I'm just going to ramble off the advisory then, because you, I know what you guys want.
Yeah.
No. Go for it.
I'm Dane. I'm an alcoholic, and my territory is British Columbia and Wyoming.
Lori, alcoholic, and my territory is Arizona and New Mexico.
My name's Dylan Onney. I'm an alcoholic from Bend, Oregon. I'm a co-treasurer of Wacky Paw Advisory, and my territories are Oregon, Washington, and Utah. Mark Alcoholic, my outreach territories are Oregon, Hawaii, NorCal, and Arizona.
I'm from Oregon, and I'm the Advisory Council co-chair. My territories are Northern California, Oregon, and Washington.
Hi, I'm Steve. I am the Native Liaison and the new web chair, and my territories are Arizona and Montana.
I'm Robbie. I'm your treasurer, and my territories are Yukon Territory, Texas, and New Mexico.
Jury alcoholic from Reno. My Spanish-speaking liaison, and my territories are Nevada and Mexico.
Erica, I am a national Mexican liaison, and my territories is Mexico and SoCal.
Tom Yosemite, Northern California and Hawaii.
Casey Alcoholic, I'm our advisory secretary, and my territories are Idaho, Wyoming, and what was that last one? Anybody?
Colorado.
Colorado.
Woo! Oh, this is bad. Hey, everybody, my name's Jared. So my territories are Alberta and Idaho, and I am the Native American liaison.
My name is John. I'm an alcoholic, and I'm your outreach chair for Wacky Paw Advisory, and my territories are Utah, BC, British Columbia, Alberta, and Northern California.
Lindsay, I'm an alcoholic. My territory is Alaska, Colorado, and Southern California.
My name is Nipples, and I am an alcoholic. My position is archive chair, and my territories are Montana and Wyoming.
Yo, this is Amaz. I'm a member at large. Yo. Microphone check, 1, 2, what is this? My territories are the Yukon, and I'm getting down with Lindsay in Alaska.
Thank you. I'd now like to pass it over to your new chair of Wacky Paw Advisory, Erica.
So, actually, we're not going to let her get off that easy.
We have one more little thing to discuss. We're not just going to pass the mic without acknowledging some amazing service work. I want to just talk for a few minutes about what this woman has gone through to even be here at the conference on a regular basis.
We're not really talking about just you can't hear me at all. I can talk louder. We're not just talking about your basic car troubles and flat tires and stuff like that. Although that has happened, but we're also talking about train wrecks, death buses, and avalanches that this woman has gone through just to be here. Anna's truly an example of someone that's willing to go to any length to be of service to Wacky Paw. Yeah. Wacky Paw is truly a better conference for having had you as chair, Erica. Now, the one thing about advisory meetings is that it's really a painstaking task to be the ringmaster of the circus that advisory can be at times. Anna absolutely hates it when we bring airborne toys and throw them at each other during the meeting. And so that you will never forget what it means to be an advisory council meeting, we got you a little something to remember us by, and I'm going to need you to catch this, Anna.
Catch it.
Good question. We'll get there. I'm Erica, I'm an alcoholic. Awesome. Thank you. So before we get to where we're going, I'm just going to read a couple notes that I made just about my experience with Wacky Paw, and I just want to share with you guys. Okay. All right. I'm so excited to be able to serve Wacky Paw in this new capacity. I can't wait to see what these next 2 years will bring for council, potential host committees, and to the Wacky Paw region. The outlook for this conference as we move forward has the potential to touch so many new areas that have yet to experience the joy of Wacky Paw. Sorry. When I think of the potential of Wacky Paw, I can't help but be in awe of its ability to change lives. I can say from my past, current, and most likely upcoming experiences that I'll be forever changed for the better because of Wacky Paw. What is coming up is going to be an experience that we will not miss. From here to eternity, there will be many lives that are affected by this great conference and the message that it brings. Looking toward the days ahead when Wacky Paw affects our children's children's children, I'm confident that Wacky Paw will still be around for them if they need it. What is just around the corner is certainly going to be a life-changing event for those who participate. I know that the future of Wacky Paw is in good hands, especially if the year was 2066.